Welcome back to another hashtag STEM Hangat episode. So this is going to be part 2 of the environment series where our previous guests, Mr. Dhanaraj Markandu and Ms. Sumeshni Subramaniam will be talking about their respective careers. Okay, so yeah, this is also the 4th day of Raya, I think. So Selamat Hari Raya. Honestly, at this time of uploading, I think everyone is beating the traffic to come back home from their kampungs to, you know, to their place of work. So yeah, I hope you guys will enjoy listening in. Is your job about, and maybe even break down what policy means to a lot of people, because policy can seem like a very big word. Please explain about your current role.
So at the moment I'm currently an energy analyst at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies Malaysia. We are a policy think tank. So what that means is that within my role I assess national policies related to the energy sector, as well as those that are related to climate and the environment, explore what sort of impacts they will have, look at areas for improvement, try to assess how they interact with other sectors of the economy, because no sector is standalone. It doesn't work in a silo. You know, everything, even energy, will interact with economy, will interact with job creation, will interact with social acceptance. So there's a lot of cross-cutting areas. And I also try and look at energy from various perspectives, whether it's domestic from a Malaysian perspective, regional, maybe from an ASEAN perspective, global from an international perspective, look at our energy sector in terms of technology, in terms of economics, in terms of the feasibility of what policymakers are saying that they want to do versus what is actually being done on the ground. So on a personal basis, I'm a very data-driven person. So I like to compile and analyze raw data. I like to look at information from different angles. I like to use that data to discover new insights about what the numbers are actually telling us. So that's just my background and how I approach policy research from a very data-driven perspective. I work with colleagues within the organization who are also experts in other topics not related to energy, like foreign policy, economy, social development, etc. And because our topics are very cross-cutting, you know, even in foreign policy, everyone's talking about energy now. Everyone's talking about environment, you know, especially, you know, when you see the COP meetings which are happening annually. When it comes to the economy, when people talk about energy and environment, it's about job creation, it's about the spillover effects on how it's going to benefit the country's economy as a whole. It's no longer just about providing energy to the people, but it's also about all the other cross-cutting effects. When you want to deploy new technology options, there's a case of social acceptance. You know, sometimes we think a clean energy source may be good, like hydroelectric, but it also impacts on the indigenous communities where those projects are going to be held, right? Even solar, for example, it requires a lot of land use to implement that kind of clean energy technology. So sooner or later, we will start to have to deal with the social impacts of all these new technologies that we're going to roll out. So that's kind of like what we look at when we do cross-cutting work within the organization, right? So different researchers have different approaches to their work. You know, some may be more quantitative, like me. Others are more qualitative, more ground-based research, meeting people, finding their thoughts, collecting survey data, things like that. So there's a mix within the organization. And besides looking at existing policies, we also do a lot of our own independent research and undertake projects in the sort of areas that interest us. And hopefully this leads to new insights and new findings. In terms of output, we try to produce articles, infographics, policy briefs, give opinions in the media, participate in forums and other events to share our perspectives, create more awareness, and elevate the discussion about our area of knowledge, and hopefully use these opportunities to guide or influence the direction of national policies. So coming back to your question about what policies really mean, right? These policies are not crafted in a room by one person sitting on their own doing work. It's always a collaborative process that requires a lot of stakeholder engagement, that requires a lot of compromise in terms of what different stakeholders think are important to them. So it's a cross-cutting area. It's something that requires a lot of engagement with people. So within the policy space, that's what we try to do. Like we try to offer insights that maybe people have not thought of before, offer perspectives based on our own area of research. And hopefully that makes it into a government policy somewhere and has a longer term impact on how the country moves forward.
So let's talk about you. Let's get deep into your job. What is your job about?
To give you like a standard textbook answer, it'll be a job that revolves around environmental challenges and implementing solutions to promote sustainability and definitely to minimize impact on the of human activities to the environment. So a standard book answer, but then again, as an engineer, as an environmental engineer, you will do anything in your capacity to solve it, either technical or non-technical manner. So that's how I see myself. So basically, when I started working, I started as a sustainability exec with an environmental engineering background. So in sustainability, you will do, if you take the four pillars or three pillars, there is the thing with sustainability or ESG, it is constantly evolving. There's like so many things inside that context. It just says ESG, but then again, inside that, it actually evolves and it gets more detailed in depth. So when I was there, I had the opportunity to work with, quite senior people who does into, for example, carbon calculation, carbon trading, so on and so forth. So that is part of it. And people will be like, hey, environmental engineer can do that or not? Yeah, actually you can. As long as you have the understanding and the basis, you can get into that. Besides that, I also have experience in waste management, water and air quality management, renewable energy and sustainability, like I mentioned just now. And to a certain extent, environmental engineers are commonly known for EIA. That is the famous job that everybody knows as an environmental engineer. But like I mentioned, there's a lot more. And now even noise management is also under environmental engineers. So there is a lot of components that we are looking at. And I'm just blessed and grateful that I had opportunity to see into bits of all this. So I've actually been in a position on as a bit of exposure of a consultant aspect. I've also have experience on a contractor's aspect. And because through IEM and certain lot of boards and as such, I've actually been exposed to policy, how they actually come up with the policies and what are the things that they have been looking at. So it is really, really interesting. And then you can just pick up something and you can get into yourself into R&D. It's a lifelong learning kind of process. It's not like a very repetitive kind of work, but it's kind of evolving, and it's just whether you want to do it and try out the other parts or components within this environmental, or would you be comfortable with just taking, for example, if you're very comfortable with water, would you just want to do into, get yourself really, really technical into water? Or you could even just go at superficial level, you understand how does the whole thing works and how do you move forward from that? When I was given this degree, when I was told, okay, you've been offered environmental engineer, I was like, what is this? I've never heard of it. And it was very surprising for me. So I had to do a lot of research and try to meet so many people to understand what is environmental engineering about and what does an environmental engineer do day to day. So I ended up meeting a lot of people. Then I found out that it does everything. But unfortunately, the job scope is not as famous and glamour in Malaysia like it's in overseas. So basically, for you to be an environmental engineer, you just need to go for an environmental engineering course. And then you just need to take subjects your major on certain subjects, and then you can go on from there. Like I mentioned, environmental engineering, we learn so much of other components like water, waste management, and so on and so forth, that after a while you will start thinking, okay, this seems interesting and I'm going to specialize myself here, because there's always opportunity. So to give you an example, I'm representing IEM, right? And I'm registered under Board of Engineers of Malaysia. But do you know there's only like less than 20 of us who are professional engineers in environmental engineers in whole Malaysia? So there's a very limited or small number of people who are professional qualified engineers in Malaysia. So I tend to look at what are the opportunities out there in environmental that I can start tapping in. So like, for example, then we had this conversation about EV. So everybody will be talking about, you know, the charging docks. Everybody will be talking about selling the car and everything. But from my perspective, I would not even look at the hood, because I will be looking into the waste. You get what I mean? So that's the angle I would look at, because when people look, every time people look at a very short-term kind of approach, nobody looks at the long-term, because you have to understand the EV chargers will have waste, and how are you going to manage this waste, because this is no longer organic waste, and these are scheduled chemical-based waste. So what are the impacts of this waste? So first, my question, if I'm put into the policy making, my question will be like, how are you going to manage this waste? Where are you going to do it? How are you going to treat this waste? And will this waste be polluting any more places? Like, for example, you're going to end it up in a landfill. It's going to cause leachate. It's going to get leakage of chemicals into our groundwater. It's going to affect my groundwater and my drinking water. Is that going to happen? Or is it going to affect my agriculture? So these are the things from my perspective that I'll be looking at. You get what I mean? Rather than I get an EV charger, I'm going to save electricity. That's not how the way I would approach certain things. So mine will be more onto strategy and management, more to policy. How do I look and solve a project, a problem more holistically?
So you work in a think tank, and you obviously, you know, every think tank will have their own publications, right? So do you think, would you suggest the youth to go and read up these publications, for example? Because sometimes when you see these think tank publications, I'm just going to be really honest, right? Because maybe for me, certain environmental jargons may be a bit simple to understand, maybe because I come from a STEM background. But if, let's say, you're talking about, like, for example, finance in environment, then maybe I'm just lost, because I have no idea what that even means. So, do you suggest this youth to, like, you know, to go straight in and read all these publications, or do you have some, you know, what do you think?
I have to agree with you, because I'm not someone who automatically dives into a lot of thick publications and policy briefs and think tanks. You know, it's think tank outputs and all that. So find the medium that suits the own way that you digest information. So, for example, if something that's related to energy, then, for example, the NETR, you know, that's something that really I'm keen to explore. So definitely I went, you know, from cover to cover in great detail. But other areas, for example, that's true, finance. I come from a very technical background, so finance is one area. Energy, environment, finance is something that's pretty new to me as well. So maybe I try to look for different sources of information, maybe not like a thick report or something like that, but a shorter, something that's more in infographic form. So pick and choose how you get your sources of information. That's definitely worth diving into some publications because you can get a lot of useful information in there. But in some cases, maybe all you need is like a 10-second YouTube video or a simple infographic. And that's one of the areas which I try to focus a bit of my work on, to make information more digestible. Engaging, more digestible. So I'm some people tend to do it. You know, there's a lot of resources now on social media, on Instagram, on TikTok, and all that, where people are doing explainers about technical terms, even climate, environment. There's just so much out there. So you don't have to lock yourself into a single thick policy document and read it from cover to cover to understand or appreciate the topic, right? But what I would say is, because there's so much information available out there, sometimes you don't know what's accurate, what's not. So this is where the critical thinking part comes in. Like, you know, what I would say is access a lot of information, but try not to take anything automatically at face value. You know, digest it for yourself. Look for verified sources. You know, always question where that information is coming from. What is the agenda of the people providing you with the information? How believable or confident the level of information is. So all that requires more active thinking, more critical thinking skills.
You definitely did switch fields, right, from technical to policy. So yeah, what motivated your career switch? And also, I have another question now. Do you need to be very experienced first in order to get into policy, since policy is all in about research? So would you suggest like having, like, I don't know, like at least a 10-year, you know, a 10-year experience in technical, for example, before getting into policy?
Sure. Both great questions. Let me start with the first one. I wouldn't really call it a career switch. For me, it looks more like a career evolution, because I started my career, as I said, in a very technical, very engineering role. You know, I was an engineer at a TNB power plant that generated electricity using coal. So initially, I was a project engineer when the plant was being constructed. And then once it was completed, I moved on to a more operation and maintenance responsibility, making sure that the facility functioned as it could, you know, fixing things. I was a typical on-site engineer, like, you know, wearing overalls, safety helmets, safety boots, you know, carrying screwdrivers, multimeters in my pockets, running around the plant, reading data, fixing things that were breaking down, you know, configuring systems. And that was just on a single power station. So after about 6.5 years in that role, I got transferred to TNB's headquarters in KL. And then I started doing sort of special projects and providing technical support for all of TNB's power plants around Peninsula Malaysia. So whereas last time it was just a single coal power plant, now I was looking after maybe 10 coal, gas, hydroelectric power plants. So it's still a decent amount of site work, but now that gets mixed in with some bigger picture stuff, you know, strategic planning, project management, understanding how the big picture thing comes together, how different plants now have to work together to make sure that people don't have blackouts, everybody still gets the electricity. You know, your horizon suddenly expands into a much wider scope. Blah. And then somewhere during my 6.5 years at the headquarters, so I took a year off to do my master's in sustainable energy. So there I got to learn about other power generation technologies like solar, wind, tidal, biomass, you know, carbon capture. But I also got the opportunity to expand, I guess, my knowledge into non-technical areas like energy economics, energy policy. And I started to get very interested in those areas as well. So you can sort of see how the foundation is building up. Like, you know, first very technical, and then you start adding different technologies, and then you start adding the non-technical stuff on top of it. So after I finished my studies, I continued on with TNB. Then I left them to work with the Malaysia Nuclear Power Corporation. This was an agency that was doing preliminary studies on the potential of using different sources of energy for electricity in Malaysia in the future. So again, I got to add another new technology to my personal portfolio. And this allowed me to get a lot of good international exposure in the area of energy. A lot of engagements with other countries, with global experts now, you know, international consultants, which again helped me widen the scope of my exposure much further. You know, so I was there for about 7 years, and then because of external factors, the research was stopped. And at that point, I moved on to become a freelance consultant, analyst. And I also wanted to take this time of being on my own to explore other areas of interest which I had. So I became a management trainer. I became a STEM educator for about 4 years because I've always been sort of training within my companies before this, but mainly like technical training. So I just wanted to explore what it would be like, you know, doing training as a business for myself for a couple of years. So for maybe about 4 years, I was just running my own enterprise, working for myself. And then in the middle of 2023, there was an opportunity to join the Institute as an analyst specializing in energy. So I thought that was a great opportunity. And maybe the right time for me to jump back into permanent employment in a role that allowed me to draw on my past experience and also get involved with national policy making, and also continue to do my own independent research in areas that I was interested in. So I think the common thread over that 25-year period is that I've always been involved in the field of energy, but the scope has expanded in so many different ways over that time. So I personally feel comfortable coming into the policy space now, late in my career, because I have a fairly decent technical background, plus wide exposure to many different aspects of the energy sector. So for me, this creates a unique way of looking at things from different perspectives when it comes to policymaking. But that doesn't necessarily have to be the only route into policy, because I work with a lot of colleagues who are passionate about policymaking. They are very knowledgeable about the topics that they want to explore in the policy space.
Okay.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that you must always have worked in that field for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. That certainly helps. But coming at it from maybe straight from university and all that is, you know, you can start off as a researcher. You can develop different competencies to also help you work in the policy space. So to me, it helps because I come from that background. But some people, maybe the process might be different. They can enter it from the policy perspective and then expand by getting in touch with stakeholders who are working on the ground. You know, you can approach it from the opposite direction, and that's fine as well.
So let's talk about challenges. So instead of, I know the question stated here is like the challenges of your niche, but I'm going to ask you, what are some of the biggest challenges facing environmental engineers in Malaysia today? If you find that too generic, because, you know, like you said, there's a lot of different branches that people could focus on. What is your biggest challenges right now?
Environmental engineers are not being recognized. That will be the biggest challenge, because as much as you stay in this environment, however, it is broken down into so many disciplines that, like, for to give you a basic understanding, environmental engineering sits under two disciplines, which is a civil and a chemical discipline. We are a subset of that. So that is from a technical discipline, board of engineers kind of level. But then again, you are in this environmental. So whatever you do to this environmental, there will be impact, and it's actually an environmental engineer's solution. You need an environmental engineer's input. However, we are normally, how do I put it, they do not include environmental engineers a lot. They'll be like, when the problem comes, they'll come and solve it. You get what I mean? When it's really bad, they'll call it. Or it's a requirement, like I mentioned just now, the EIA. So if they want the project to be approved, you need to do an EIA. So that's where they call you in. It's like, oh, environmental engineers, can you come and help us to do this? Or they want a plan, environmental management plan. That's where they call it. They fail to see that you need us throughout the whole 9 years, the whole process before you start it, during, and in after, and so on and so forth. Because it is it's ever changing, and there's always a new problem. And you want to make sure that we are in the know when you come in. You do not, you know, it's not like plugging a hole and then the problem is solved. It really causes other impacts. So, like, just now I gave you an example, the EV battery. So they throw it in a landfill. If the landfill is not properly maintained or not properly managed, or the lining of the has some breakage, so it leaks. When it leaks, it goes into your groundwater. What happens to groundwater? Groundwater goes to human people drinking water consumption pipelines. When it goes there, it contaminates people. Falls. You see the whole supply chain or not? Could have just called us in front, right?
Yeah,
so that it consistently
prevent all that from happening.
Exactly. But you always wait until something bad happens, and then you expect another person to come in and, you know, to become a superman and solve it.
So how would you convince the anak muda of today to pursue your careers or even just your industry at the moment?
the exposure that the anak muda is having right now is way different than the previous generation. And environmental is big. You have a lot of components. And if you really want to get into this, you have to be patient. You have to get your hands dirty. And you should not give up. Because trust me, it's an area that people will keep dismissing whatever you are trying to point out. You may be entirely right, you may be partly wrong, or you could be entirely wrong, because it is something that is very, it's a very gray area. So understand the issue as much as you can, and then talk to many people, get the inputs correct, and then make a decision. So that's the only thing I'll tell to anak muda, because I know the style of the current anak muda is very much social driven, social media driven, and so on and so forth. But as an environmental engineer, we really have to get down and get dirty. And I'm talking about, again, like this one I mentioned about waste management. It's not a
glamorous job.
And, you know, you'll be like wondering to yourself, what am I doing? So you have to find your purpose. What are you trying to solve? And you have to hold it very dearly to yourself. And then that's the only thing that will make you go far.
Energy and environment are both critical topics for the future, a future that you guys, the anak muda of today, are going to inherit. So decisions that we make now are going to have an impact on our lives, our livelihood, our kids, our children's children for decades to come. So it's really important that the youth of today have the knowledge, the skills, the opportunities to influence what that future is going to look like. Now, so if you are someone who's passionate to create the kind of future that you and generations after you will want to live in, then there's definitely a role in energy and environment, these sectors, that will suit your interests and your abilities, regardless of whether it's technical or non-technical. You know, it comes down to what sort of future that you want to create for yourself.
And that is the end of another episode. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you so much to our panelists for giving their time. And also to all our dear anak muda. I hope this episode would be a very good starting point in your thought process in deciding what kind of career you want. Especially for those who really want to make Malaysia a better place in terms of, you know, in terms of preserving our mother nature. So yeah, and also these careers, both of the positions discussed just now were also positions in demand. So yeah, I hope adalah juga isi yang boleh kita dapat from this conversation. Okay, so this is actually the second last episode of STEM Hangat. So the last episode of STEM Hangat is going to be about careers in the technological field. So yeah, in the digital space, which is basically one of the most demanding fields in this century at the moment. So yeah, I hope you guys will stay tuned to that. Thank you so much, and we'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.